This week on RSPNB Update, Jagex has been sold and there's something fishy going on. We dive in. Double XP Extended is now Double XP Live, and we cover the charitable givings of the drop. Plus, the Ninja Team PAG and uncovering the archaeology data stream. This is RSBNB Update, episode 775, recorded Thursday, April 30th, 2020. Pay yourself to play. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update. It's quiet. It's quiet, Tannis, isn't it?
No. Not at all.
Well, I mean, it's quiet because this is the first time in 5 weeks that it's just us on the show.
Well, yes, but there is plenty of news to fill in that space.
Including some news that here at RSPNB Update, we're going to be breaking. And you could say that, you know, other people might have been assuming this, but we have actually done the research and we will be breaking news in that category in just a bit, but I think some people might have an idea about where that's headed. But nonetheless, this is going to be a very jam-packed edition of RSBNB Update, and you know, I think we're going to have lots of emotions on this one, aren't we?
Shane might catch some feels, I think.
Anyways, folks, if you're joining us for the first time, this is RSBNB Update. And if you want full show notes, you can find them at update.rsbnb.com. Friends chat is Bits Bytes. And, you know, we're going to discuss the RuneScape news of the week to start off with. And there is big news. I am Shane12088, and he is Tannis79. We're here each and every week discussing RuneScape's news. So let's start off with the easy stuff, shall we? The drop is back for charity. Woo. Running April 27th through May 3rd. This time we have quizzes that are based on general RuneScape knowledge. Like, for example, one of the questions was, who do you talk to start the World Wakes quest? What god is not featured in the original God Wars? That kind of thing. The drop happens every 30 minutes on the half hour. And with that, there's a two-minute window for you to get to Burthorpe and speak to charity to get into the drop before it actually begins. You can do the competition as many times as you like between the 27th and the 3rd. And for every player who takes part on the drop one or more times, Jagex is going to be donating £1 to their charity partners, up to a maximum of £34,500. And, you know, I think they did well on the quiz questions this time. They were nice and general RS theme. They weren't too hard, I think, so that's good. Did you have a chance to head there and
Yeah, I didn't think they were too bad. I mean, everybody, if you can do it twice, please do, because that's huge for charity right now. No, I didn't think they were too bad, but of course, that being said, I did get them all right.
Duke Horatio can be found in which settlement? Varrock, Rimington, Lumbridge, or Doyen?
Yeah, I got that one.
Yeah. And, you know, I went at a quiet time. There's only me and one other person in there. We also happened to be a clan member, Cyan. So that was fun getting a face off. We both made it to the end. The ancient pylon is located at which archaeology dig site?
Uh-huh.
Caridet, of course.
Right.
And these are just some of the questions that you'll see featured in the drop. And I think it's really good for them to do this as a charity event. I want to underscore that. And the fact that, you know, you go play something in-game and they donate £1. That's excellent, right? Because,
yes,
you know, this is a time where people are strapped for cash and they might not be able to donate in the typical ways to their usual charity endeavors. But this makes it so that you can play RuneScape, something you presumably love if you're listening to this podcast, and also contribute to charity in this regard too, which, you know, given this time, it's something that I think everybody can be very proud of.
Who doesn't love trivia? I mean,
yeah,
that's just fun.
Yeah, and you know, I think it'd be fun if we could, you know, do more of this in the drop, so to speak. Just, you know, in general, RuneScape trivia I think would be a fun thing to look into, but that's a topic for another time. I just have a couple of concerns about this, actually, on this event. And the first one is that if you have a weak internet connection as the drop is about to start, or there's lots of people doing it, and this was a problem on the first day, you would go into the drop, you'd get asked the question, you'd answer, and then it would drop you out. It would literally drop you and say you got the wrong
and
answer.
And you got dropped.
Yeah. I think that's mainly due to the number of people who would have been interacting with it at the time, so that's a minor problem on that front. My biggest concern, though, with this event, and I can see why they're limiting it to on the half hour because it's for a charitable feature, so you want to kind of concentrate when people are doing it, so you are gathering people and making it feel more as though a community event rather than just, you know, spacing it through the hour. So that's fine. I would prefer to be able to go at any time I want, but I can understand choosing to limit it to once every 30 minutes. But my biggest concern with this, and something I was really surprised that didn't happen with this event, is that if you go into the typical community events thing, that events section is grayed out. You know, I was hoping that there'd be a information splash page about the drop and a quick teleport button to teleport you directly there from that community events page, which, I mean, for charity, it seems like something you would have wanted to put in. And
that was
my biggest concern about this.
That had to, I mean, I'm going to chalk that up to an oversight because it seems like that's what it would have been. Because, I mean, you want as many people to participate as possible. You're going to get as much bang for your buck.
Yeah, and I mean, I'd even go so far as to say pop up one of those modal dialogue boxes that appears when you first log in saying, hey, would you like to, would you like to do the drop?
It's something that I wish they would have done more, because this is an actual, I mean, this is really positive. This is part of the initiative, you know, that they're doing for charity. And this is, I think this is all for mental health,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's for their mental health partners.
And, I mean, that's wonderful. I mean, we need, you need that right now.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
People are dealing with a whole variety of different, you know, mental challenges, you know, just from being from isolation to anxiety to, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on in the world right now.
Yeah. And, you know, RuneScape's been a really good escape for people over that in the past month with archaeology and the like. So perfect timing for that to come out. And, you know, I think Mental Health Awareness Month in May is also going to be very special with that too. And, you know, the fact that we're saying the only thing that was wrong with this event was the fact that there wasn't a quick teleport to it says that it's accomplished what it needs to do.
Yeah.
So.
It's gonna be May.
Oh, please don't.
Come on, Shane.
No.
It's gonna be May.
No. Ugh. Were you a fan of that song growing up?
No, I hear it all the time from the misses.
Okay.
I joke. Yeah.
All right. Fair enough. Let's move on to the patch notes then, because, I mean, we're going deeper. We're going to get to the big kahuna in just a bit. But patch notes this week were interesting for the Ripper Demon fixes on this front. But aside from that, we have some other interesting ones. We're going to start off with Ripper, of course, first. The special attack has been reduced to one hit. Previously, it was three. Damage from the special attack has been changed to 200 to 320% of the base attack, so brought down. Attack speed has been reduced. The passive effect on the player has been halved, and the max hit has been increased from 864 to 1341. So overall, they have reduced the ban to make it more normal, I guess you could say, in a statistical sense from that, and just reducing the strange, you know, large one-hit maximums that have been seen with the Ripper Demon Familiar. on this, and we'll have to see how this metabolizes as we move into game, as we progress through this and people start using them.
Yeah. R.I.P. Ripper Demon.
I wouldn't say if it's R.I.P. Ripper Demon.
No. I mean, of course I'm being facetious, but I'm the only part of this that I'm a little unsure of is the halving of the passive effect. I didn't know the passive effect was people considered that so powerful. That makes me want to ask David, like, is that a big deal or not?
Well, I didn't ask him about the passive. He did say that it's pretty close between a Ripper Demon and a Nihil Familiar when below 100%. And, you know, if you're using the scrolls of the Ripper Demon, that will edge out what we currently have in game instead of, you know, what it was before being doubly right. as effective on those.
And that's good because it's giving you a little bit, I guess it's bringing a little.
Yeah, it's a choice. And I mean, the Steel Titan is going to be the cheaper choice to use from that sense, because, you know, Ripper Demons, the implicit cost in these is that you need to go out and kill them. And Ripper Demons are a lot harder to kill than to make, you know, a Steel Titan familiar. We'll have to watch this and see what happens, but he seems to be pleased with these changes and that they were needed for the health of the game.
Yeah, we all knew it needed, I can't believe I'm going to say this, but it needed a nerf. it did. I'm just, like I said, I was a little hesitant about the passive, but otherwise, it looks like good stuff.
All right. Material caches will now appear as depleted inside quest instances. I'm guessing the primary one for this is going to be inside the Wizard's Tower basement material caches.
Yes. Oh, man. Dude, that was so good for a minute.
But you have to be on the quest. You have to be on the quest for that.
No. You just had to not have finished the quest.
Oh.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Oh, so you make an archaeology farming account and start the quest, and you got infinite cadmium, boom, red, boom. Vellum, and whatever the other one is down there.
Now you getting it. Yep.
Okay, I see why this was done now. I didn't know that would be during the entire quest. I wonder if there's any other instances where that was the case.
We haven't found any others, but yeah, we uncovered that a couple, like, not long after it dropped.
Yeah.
I was looking for that stuff. We're trying to figure that out, yeah.
All right. The survey option on the Warforge barricade no longer incorrectly states it can give artifacts. All right.
That's good.
Some pathing in Warforge has been slightly adjusted when attempting to run to a lower level while standing near the forge. The message for all item-producing familiars, including the new Water Fiend, now states which item they produced if you have it unfiltered.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like that.
Do you play with the game filtered chat on or off?
It really depends. Most of the time, I will play filtered unless I need to unfilter it for a audio cue that I have set up.
Right, and you do that for accessibility side.
For accessibility, yeah.
All right. Seth Minas has remembered what he was doing or going to say about the dig site quest before you've started it. Nothing, it turns out. I don't know why that's in there. I don't remember what his role in the quest was, but that's hilarious.
Yeah.
Tetrarch journal pages have been renamed to correctly reflect their author. Good. Players are no longer able to disassemble or alchemize their autoscreener version 1.080.
Why would you do that?
I don't know. That's a very expensive disassembly.
Yeah.
And I've actually stopped using the autoscreener, but I'll talk about that later. A retrieve all option has been added to the archaeology skilling outfit and elite skilling outfit when reclaiming them from Diango. Samid gloves will now work correctly when training archaeology. Those are the ones that give you gold. GP, rather, not gold. I say gold, but you know I mean GP.
Yeah. I love this Diango.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's a good one. Draken's Medallion will no longer lose charges if teleporting from within Everlight. And see, this is the important part, and I wasn't clear on this last week, is that if you're in Everlight and use Draken's Medallion, if you're at the bank chest and restoration bench, you don't lose a charge. But I guess you were losing a charge if you were further within the Everlight dig site. So this is actually really good for this one, because that medallion allows you to teleport away and get your Silvethrall and Ceridome and Stars right away to the Barrow's excavation site.
Yeah, I haven't been there for a while.
Sounds like you got a bit of a pause on that.
It was very crowded when I was there.
Okay.
Very, very competitive.
All right, fair enough, fair enough. Tweak the look of ancient gizmos so they're easier to tell apart from standard gizmos. Archaeology material storage now is a configure option where you can change the left-click option, which is either deposit all or store, which opens up the interface for it that shows you what you have. Personally, I like deposit all for the left-click. You?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I noticed that too this week, because I'd clicked it and it just everything was gone. I'm like, huh, cool. Like that must be the default.
Yeah, it's a very nice little smooth change. A floating pillar in the Stormguard Citadel has been grounded again.
Uh-oh.
Removed a plant that was clipping with a rock at Stormguard. Removed some floating geometry at Everlight and Warforge. Now, here's one. The Ubisec clay and vulcanized rubber material caches near the Warforged dig site are now considered part of the dig site and will award players earth and clay while excavating them. And, of course, this is topside by the Spirit Tree.
Okay, that's cool. Yeah, I've been there a lot.
Yeah.
Spent a lot of time there.
Yeah. I've been spending a lot of time there, too. Dig site imagery has been updated on the world map tooltips as well as their respective archaeology research. And, you know, this was missing first, and it just adds that extra nice level of polish to it. Damage dealt under the effect of the Eldritch Crossbow's special attack via Soul Split is now tracked correctly by combat challenge gems. I wonder why this is in the archaeology section here.
I couldn't tell you. I don't know. There's nothing about that crossbow that's archaeology related.
No, it's not. It came out in 2019. It's the 92 ranged crossbow from the Ambassador. And it's got that interesting special attack split soul that when you use it for 15 seconds, instead of getting healed, the curse damages your target for 4 times the amount of life points it would have healed. I like this. I want to look into that one day, but that's a topic for another day. The Archaeology Journal has been updated with painted pictures of artifacts. I haven't been able to find this one. I don't know.
Pictures of artifacts.
I don't exactly know what this is referring to. Like, I clicked on all the artifacts in the collections of what I've restored, but I don't know what this is referring to in part, so it's an interesting note, but I don't see it and haven't been able to see it. So if anybody has some insight on that, that'd be appreciated. Inquisitor,
I don't see anything different,
right?
Oh.
Well, and I mean, we shouldn't ask you about seeing things differently, but you
well,
know.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah. Didn't think about that.
Inquisitor staff pieces, Annihilation Spear tips, and Dragon Maddox will now all fire friends and clan broadcast messages.
Cool.
Your adventure's long will highlight the first time you find a Dragon Maddox. The Hobgoblin man sticker requirement for Valicia's Bandosian 2 collection has been swapped with a Dorgishan spear from Valicia's Bandosian 3 collection, so that was probably throwing some people off in terms of the level bands required for those ones. And finally, a settings category has been added for archaeology. It can be found under the skills heading. And in here, you have settings such as being able to turn off the notice when you hit 100% sprite focus, that it says that you have obtained that appears above your character's head. And there's also an option to turn off getting Imkamdo metal pieces after you've already got them.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And I think there's one other one, but I'm blanking on what that is right now. One thing that I think might have been interesting to have in the settings category, and I don't want anyone to shoot me for this, is, and maybe this is too much info, but I would like to see this from time to time, and maybe this is a question I could ask elsewhere rather than putting it into a settings section. But you know how you have that progress bar that fills up above your head that shows how close you are to getting an artifact? I'd like to have a numerical sense of that. Not necessarily percentage-based, because that's easy to see. But what is the health of the material, or rather the excavation site that I'm excavating, and what is that health, and how much is each tap of my matic getting that for me? Because we have that with mining. We can see how much health each rock has, and we can make some educated guesses based on pickaxe stats, but we don't have any health for the archaeology side of the individual excavation sites. And maybe that's something that could go on the survey option instead of having something that appears above your character's head. And that's just something I've been thinking of a little bit as I've been leveling up. I don't know if anybody else feels that same way. In hindsight, it would probably be better putting it on the survey option rather than in a settings section.
Could say, are you advocating for a toggle shape?
In that case, I guess I'm not.
Oh.
All right. Next up, general bug fixes for the game. Fixed an issue causing the Eldritch crossbow special attack to deal zero damage to necks.
Ouch.
More clipping issues at Stormguard, as well as some material Z fighting issues at Stormguard. And what this basically means is that if you put objects on the ground, the environment was having problems of determining which ones to render properly. And also similar things with texture Z fighting at Stormguard as well. Fixed an issue that was causing the Blood Reaver familiar to take damage from players when stacking multiple instances of healing. All right. And I think for this one, we got to go into what exactly the Blood Reaver familiar does, because, you know, they put seven new familiars in, and I think that this one is one that is going to have a bit of use. I think many people who are higher leveled aren't going to go to this, but for people who are leveling up, it's actually a good option, because what it does is it heals 25% of your healing done as damage, or deals 25% of your healing done as damage to the target.
Yeah. So and it's then, kind of like a smaller version of the Eldritch special
deck. Exactly. And then its scroll transfers 10% of the familiar's health to you.
Okay.
Which, I mean, I've never really seen many people think of using this one, but I can definitely see someone who's leveling up see this as a good familiar to use.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you just want to have something out, you might.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I mean, if you're not using a Beast of Burden or something to that effect. And finally, fixed a light in Crit Et that was causing material caches to appear as two separate colors, which I could imagine would be a bit of a problem for you.
I would imagine.
Yes. All right. There's our patch notes for the week.
Yay. Are you ready?
Yeah. And, you know, I have to ask everybody else if they're ready for this. And we'll go through the news post first about what exactly happened with this, and we'll talk about what our research unpacked on this. So, starting off this week on the 28th, we had an announcement that Jagex had been sold to a new parent company. We knew last year that Fukong Interactive was looking at the sale of assets, with Jagex as one of the potential options. And they announced this week that the company has been sold to MacArthur Fortune Holding LLC through one of its funds, Platinum Fortune, from previously known as Shanghai Hongtao Network. And Hongtao Network was also acquired by Platinum Fortune with this. And the important part, as with any corporate sale, is to underscore that the management team of Jagex and the staff in the UK will remain in place, which I think is probably the biggest thing people have in mind when dealing with corporate sales, right?
Yeah, I think people want to know, how will this affect me? Will there be anything that I need to worry about?
Yeah. They say MacArthur Fortune shares Jagex's passion for video games and is dedicated to utilizing its experience and expertise to add value to one of the longest-standing video game developers through strategically investing in R&D and marketing to attract new players to its RuneScape franchise of games. Mod Pips, Phil Mansell, the CEO of Jagex, said that the combined strength of MacArthur Fortune and Jagex will both support and enhance our strategic plan to deliver great gaming experiences to our communities of RuneScape players and build on our portfolio with more living games for a global audience. All right. So, seems all peachy on the top, right?
Sure.
But, you know, doing as we do here at the podcast, we like to have all the information. So what started as a rather innocuous lookup into MacArthur Fortune and Platinum Fortune LP has led to many more questions than we have answers currently. So just a bit of background for this. Back in 2016, Jagex was sold to the Shandong Hongda Mining Company through Fukong Interactive for $300 million. Now, early indications for what this new sale means for players are that nothing will change in the short term, and this is something we should all take comfort in. As with most corporate changeovers, there's a chance that in the medium to long term we might see changes at Jagex, since nothing in the corporate world is for certain. But as with most of these changes, there's a series of unintended consequences and unknowns for us as players. Now, here's where it gets really interesting and perhaps a little bit questionable. Platinum Fortune LP, the main fund that owns Jagex currently through MacArthur, was founded in April of 2019, 1 year ago. Now, MacArthur Fortune Holding, the parent company of Platinum, was founded in only February of 2020. And both of these pieces of information are easily able to look up. They're both Delaware companies, so you just go to the Delaware.gov website and you can look up these corporations. Both of these corporations are also incredibly vague online. There's no website for either of them, no filed documents, and no listed directors. These are private companies, of course, and because of this, they're not required to disclose anything. But what is slightly odd and perhaps worrying on this is that these companies were both founded within the same time window that the Hongda Mining Company and Fukong were wanting to sell off assets. Now, looking into this further, through research that we've done through translated documents and from the business legal side of this, it appears as though another holdings company named Pluto Sama's Holding Incorporated last year came into the picture. Based on the translations of these documents and a Pluto Sama's Holding announcement, it appears as though that Pluto Sama's was brought in to oversee the sale of the assets in question, Jagex, and of course with this, the Hongtao Network. Now, through this, it was decided that Platinum Fortune would be the ultimate transferee of the major asset in question. Now, the question that we're wondering on this is, where does MacArthur come in? Because there was no mention of MacArthur earlier, and the fact that we're being told in this news post that MacArthur Fortune is the primary company that bought Jagex, yet they're only incorporated in February 2020, raises questions. Now, in February of this year, Pluto's Holdings transferred 100% ownership of what is Jagex and Hongtao Network to MacArthur Fortune Holding, LLC. These changes can be seen in a translated document that we'll link in the show notes from the Fukong Interactive Board of Directors meeting in March of 2020. Now, if MacArthur Fortune Holding had been founded prior to February 2020, this would be the end of the story. But the way the sale happened raises more questions than it answers. The language in the translated document suggests some shady business practices by Fukong's parent company, the mining corporation, and with them being forced to sell assets, this is why Pluto Samus Holdings was brought in. The language used in the document suggests that there wasn't actually a sale and merely a transferal of assets. What this means is that we end up with a corporate entity arrangement that looks like this. What it means is that Fukong and Pluto Samus and the Shandong Mining Corporation effectively own MacArthur, where MacArthur owns Platinum, and Platinum owns Jagex. And due to the necessary corporate reporting in the UK, all that needs to be known for the sake of the legal entity of Jagex Limited in the UK is that they're owned by Platinum Fortune LP, a registered company in the United States. The sale also raises questions because if you're a corporation, you can report that you bought something for a few years back at $300 million but sold for $530 million. That looks great on paper. It's excellent. But on the flip side, it could be that the company, Jagex, is valued at substantially less than $530 million, letting the companies in question use the sale profits to write off corporate debt. And this should be something that's concerning to the employees of Jagex over time, if this is indeed what the fate of the company is to be passed around to write off corporate debt. And with this, we're working off of rough translations and documents aimed at a corporate legal audience, but this doesn't change the fact that big questions exist about both MacArthur and Platinum that could be addressed by a statement from those directors of those two companies. At this point, players should not worry in the short term. But out of all of the owners of Jagex over the past 20 years, these are by far the most mysterious, and we still have many questions that are left to be answered at this point. And this is where our story ends, and something that really wasn't reported in this news post on the Jagex website, but certainly appears to be more of just a transferal than an outright sale to a different company. And we say, if we're all wrong on this, and I would be happy to be proven wrong on this by a statement from MacArthur or Platinum or even further clarification from Mod Pip's Phil Mansell, and it proves us wrong, I would be happy to see this as something that was due to the translation errors of the meeting notes from March, and that this is indeed been sold to an independent company in the United States. And that's where we're at with this. And I think we need to underscore that if this did indeed happen, that it was a transferal to write off debt, that is entirely legal in the corporate world. And it happens every day. But this appears what happens.
But legal and good are two entirely different things.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
And many, you know, I know many of our listeners are Americans, but some are not. And if you're not, there is a reason that someone would choose to incorporate in Delaware. There's a reason for that.
They have a very low number of regulations and low taxes for that purpose. It's very easy to incorporate in Delaware.
Yep. It's very easy. So do your own research into that, but There are definitely reasons you would do that.
Yeah, and I mean, you look up documents for these companies, and there's nothing. They don't exist anywhere. The directors don't exist on LinkedIn. The companies don't exist on LinkedIn. And for multi-million dollar companies in 2020, you would expect them to exist on LinkedIn.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we have seen this happen with companies before, writing off bad debt. Sometimes they live, sometimes they don't. It just depends.
Yeah, and you know, if this is going to keep happening and this is what Jagex is destined for, in 6 to 18 months, they'll be sold again to a different company who wants to do the same thing. And that's why if you're an employee of the company and you're there and this is going to be the way going forward, that should maybe raise some concern. But that's why I said in the short to medium term, there really should be no issue for us players in the short to medium term, as in the next 6 months or so. If it starts to happen again after that, then we'll look into what that means.
Yeah, I think that's probably one of the most important things. Well, two important things. One, you everything that you just stated has come through research. It wasn't, it's not hearsay, it's research. It's solid stuff.
I actually consulted people who speak Chinese on this.
Right. Right. Yeah. No.
And consulted people with a business legal background too. And that is entirely what is happening with this.
Right. And then the other, I mean, I think the other major thing is for players, I really don't think there's going to be anything. And I know what they're worried about. They're thinking, oh God, now it's going to be more MTX. And I don't see anything on a studio level changing for us.
If they keep making corporate profits, that's what you need to write off the debt. So if it's being successful to be used for that, nothing will change in that regard. It just raises some questions about if you want to be involved in that kind of company as an employee.
Yes. Yes. Or maybe someday everybody start saving your change jars and we'll just buy the sumbitch ourselves.
You'd need hundreds of millions for that.
Yeah, it's just $1 from every account that's ever been created.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
Just $1.
But, folks, this is the news, and, you know, the news post looks good. I have distilled down what we just talked about into a document that I'll be posting on Informer to go along with the show with a nice little chart of the organization on that. So we'll have all this laid out in full to ensure that it is able to be digested and shared around as needed. So hopefully this has cleared up some confusion about what exactly was going on with the sale of Jagex this week. And, you know, like we said, it should be fine in the short term, and we'll leave it at that. All right. Anything else you want to throw in on the sale, or I think we covered most of it, eh?
You know, let's leave it here, because...
And reevaluate if we get more info.
Yeah, I mean, you've laid out the facts.
And we've asked the questions.
So all we can do now is wait and see. You know, I mean, that's the only responsible thing we can do right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, we're not going to TMZ or Fox News this and, you know, or InfoWars this, I guess you could say in this era. So, all right. Next up, we have Meet the Ninja Team, PEG, which is the player advocacy group set up. And this one's being overseen by the RS guy. And, you know, we're going to have to wait and see about what happens with the next player advocacy group, because what we got here is we got high-level invention. We have PVM. We have a clue scroll nerd. We have a maxed player. We have a 200 mil Iron Man. We have another PVMer. We have someone from the PVM encyclopedia. And we also have someone from one of the top skilling clans out there.
Yeah. So this really ruffled some feathers, huh?
It did. Like, it did.
We're not super happy about this.
Because everything that we see with this PEG is, you know, it's all structured in towards one group of players. And, you know, our producers just had a good discussion on this week. And the general resounding opinion on this from most people is that, you know, it's too elitist on this front.
Look, in some ways it is. And in some ways, I don't think it could have been anything else.
Yeah. And it was going to be inherently clicky from just the way it was set up.
Right. And so with Jagex picking a champion, right, which is the RS guy in this case, then he picks his team. Now, who are you going to pick? You're going to pick people that you know or know of or you're familiar with, right? So I am not I'm not surprised at the people that he picked. Now, that being said, too, being the first PEG, having all that pressure, picking your team, could he have come out and just picked a bunch of average players, or would we be having a discussion going, well, what do these people know? They don't know.
Right, and that's my general sense, is that it's hard to find an average player who knows what they're doing and is going to be able to contribute to this.
But would be respected right. by people, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's the thing here. And so,
but distilling this down, it comes down to various tags. You got PVM, invention, clue yeah. scrolls, an insane skill incline, 200 mil Iron Man, 200 mil player, PVM.
Right.
And they all cluster around that.
Yes.
And we saw some data that the average level of skills for the community at large is in the 60s to 70s. So the question is, can someone who is a 200 mil max player, or someone who leads an insane skill incline, and someone who does PVM every day be representative of someone in their 60s and 70s for the ninja team? Or is this ninja team player advocacy group going to just be tasked with coming in with ninja fixes that the top echelon of players like? And if that's fine, if they want to do that for the first one, good, do it. But the next one had better be reoriented differently.
Well, and that has been my whole thing from the beginning.
And that's why it's also kind of hard to pass judgment on it right now.
Right. I have to see what the next champion pick is. That is going to determine a lot of – like, for me, things will fall into place. Number one, right now, I can't tell if Jagex will be playing favorites. I can't tell if they're going to stick to what they deem as influencers, meaning streamers. Or if they are really going out for a diverse and unique perspective on the game that can help them, do what they're supposed to do, which is advocate for players. That all happens with this next pick because
yeah.
that person is going to pick people.
And these are only month-long contracts too, by the way.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. So it ends at the end of May.
Oh, okay.
They complete their work on May 15th, and shortly thereafter we get the debriefing on that. Though it'll have redacted info, of course.
Okay. See, I thought that there was going to be several of these that were going throughout at the same time. Okay. That was a little unclear then, because I guess I didn't see that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know though. I almost feel like when it comes to ninja updates, we do want accomplished people, right? Like, we want people that know what's going on because ninja updates deal so much with quality of life stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's just a question, can you get those to precipitate downwards?
That's the $1 million question.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And
I mean, there's so much to be seen. There's so much that we're going to know with the next one that, you know, that's what's got me just kind of, you know, stuck here without being able to pass a lot of judgment because.
Yeah, because you don't want to pass judgment before things change.
Well, I just don't have the information.
Yeah.
Like, I can't do it with just a partial data set here. You know what I mean? Like, and for me, it makes complete sense of who he would pick. And honestly, like, we might say it's elitist, but those are some quality players, like, that know the game inside and out. You know, it's just a matter of hopefully not every peg is going to be like that. But
yeah. Yeah.
Then we'll have a different discussion when step becomes
clear. Yeah, you got to take it one step at a time, really, on that. Okay. That was easier than I thought it would be.
But the next one won't be.
Yeah, the next one won't be. And we might go through some of the data from the data stream this week. If we have time for it, we'll see how long this segment takes here. But Double XP Live starting Friday, May 8th. It's not Double XP Weekend Extended anymore. It's Double XP Live.
Yeah. So we get a new name.
Yeah, and it's happening quarterly.
That's the part that's really got people out of whack. And, you know, I get it. I'm a huge double XP guy. Like I, that's something special. Like for me, at least it was. It's kind of lost a little bit of its luster lately, but four a quarter, Shane.
Yeah, one every quarter.
So here's my theory. I'm wondering if this is how it's going to be. I think people that played prior to, I don't know, 2012, really going to have their panties bunched up over this. People past then probably aren't going to care at all, unless it's an economic concern. And I bet you could draw a line and totally see it.
Yeah. My main concern is still the fact that, okay, we're doing four of these a year. There's going to be 8 weeks out of 52 where double XP is active. Granted, it's not going to be for 8 weeks at a time. There's going to be 48 hours of each of those two-week periods where you're going to be able to do it. But you're going to have the option to in 8 out of 52 weeks every year.
Right. And, you know, the news post, I think what they were saying was they were taking this idea of flexibility and kind of expanding on it.
Yeah. And that's the first question, because they say we've had very positive feedback about the new format, which provides a healthier gameplay experience with less emphasis on playing for long periods of time.
Right. And, you know, with this, like, I don't have a problem with this in of itself. For one, I've never been someone to get salty over the XP that someone else is getting. I just don't care. That right. is not my business.
My problem with it is that we're funneling all these people into double XP weekends. They're going to max eventually. What do you do after you max?
Yeah.
That's my biggest question on this. Comes after max?
Well, you end up with the same question that we've been trying to answer for
a year now with the comp rework.
For a year now.
Like, we had a good thing there, but
well, you know, you win some, you lose some. And we didn't end up any worse for wear.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's kind of...
That was the safe road that was taken with that.
I mean, sometimes that's a victory, right? I mean, you gotta take the do no harm as a victory.
The next question was, does this inject too much XP into the game? And they said at the data from the last two double XP events, they saw that most players used half of their total double XP quota, and approximately 10% went on to use the whole 48 hours. This is consistent with data that we saw in the old 72-hour double XP weekends.
And this goes to probably one of my problems with it, right? So everyone's concerned about the XP that is brought in. That's not concerning to me whatsoever. What is concerning, though, is...
Well, they wouldn't do it if the metrics were saying it was bad.
Right. So, I mean, so XP isn't... That's not really a factor. But what sucks is, in order to make it flexible, they've increased it, which diminishes its intrinsic value. You know what I mean? Like, there was a value in double XP that was beyond the XP.
The social side of it.
Yeah, and people love, like, you know, oh, new people are online, stuff. You know, I pretty much just talk to the same people I'm going to talk to anyway, but we are all on at that time, and so that's nice. You know, that is cool. But even the little rituals that you go through, you know, you prepared for this, you think about this, your gameplay kind of, you think about, like, when you're going to buy, when you're going to sell, when you're going to hold on to stuff to get, you know, like, so much kind of went into that, and it was fun for me to kind of game that stuff out. Now I feel like it's not going to be as special. I mean, the one coming up, dude, I'm just going to be doing archaeology. Like, I'm not even participating really.
Me too.
I'd rather be doing archaeology, you know, like, and that makes me sad.
I'll probably get 120 invention.
Special.
From it,
but. Yeah, I know. But you remember like the twice a year was just like, it was perfect. It was like,
yeah, And you know, another thing with this is that there's a calendar, and the calendar always has to be filled with something happening. And that's more and more the way every game is going.
Right. And a lot of games, you know, will do this. It might be, it might not be double or this or that, but I mean, you know, this isn't uncommon, and I'm fine with that. It's just that in this particular game, there has been a tradition and culture that has built up around this event. It's different than other events. And, you know, I think we are going to lose, like, that is a trade-off, and we are going to lose some of that because of the frequency and the flexibility that we have now.
Yeah, and, you know, that's another thing is that they were talked about the prestige of a double XP event, and they said it all comes down to some players feeling pressured because they don't want to miss it and have a long wait until the next one, and they want players to have more freedom to choose how and when they play without intruding on personal commitments or family time.
You know, and it's not even that I'm opposed to that. I'm opposed to that point of view, but at the same time, it's like, oh, don't give me the FOMA excuse. Bullshit. You know what I'm saying? Oh, I'm afraid I'm a... Dude, no. No. Come on. We're all making choices here, right? I mean, if you have to work that day, that sucks. I'm sorry. But that's kind of life, right? I mean...
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Am I being too harsh?
I never understood the pressure of taking time off for double XP weekends.
You know, I sit here and I talk about the planning and all that, and I do all that, and I've had fun with all that. And I might try to make sure, you know, the family goes and does something fun that day, and I can have the day here myself.
Right.
But if I'm tired, I'm going to lay down. If I have to work, I'm going to work. Or if, you know what I'm saying?
But there are people who don't have that control level.
I don't understand how, though. Like, how? Like, I'm not, like, the strongest person in the world. It's not, like... I mean, and if you're underage, that's the parent's job. Like, that's my job, right? If my daughter wants to do this, that's my job to make sure she's not going crazy. I don't know.
Yeah, of just handing people the tablet and saying, go for it, right? And they expect, whether it be YouTube or Netflix or the game on the thing or even RuneScape, to just throw those limits in. And I see it both ways. And, you know, my biggest concern with this, I am all for this. And my biggest concern is what happens after max, because you're going to keep funneling more and more people towards 99s, more and more people towards 120s, more and more people to 5.6. Granted, 5.6 is far away, as are the 120s, but max is something that is reachable for many people, and it's just like, what happens after that? Right? That's my biggest question with this, is because what are people going to do in your game after that?
You're going to do the same thing.
And if I can have an answer to what are you going to do after you max, because you have maxed your account in a year, because you like this game, what are you going to do? And if there's a good answer to that, I will accept it and accept this as our new reality.
Well, I think their new reality is you just keep doing what you're doing. I don't think anything really changes much. 120s mostly, but... I mean, people seem to either do 120s or get real heavy in the PPM. That really seems to be. And we've talked about this before. Is that the right way? I think there's a better way of doing it.
Yeah.
But here we are.
And, you know, if we wanted to take this double XP live one step further and they wanted to truly decentralize it and give people the ultimate choice, you get to have four periods of 2 weeks of double XP with 48 hours in them, four times a year. You choose when you're going to do them, as long as you do them 1 month apart.
Then that could, I mean, that could be the next step.
And, I think that is the next step.
And if that is next step, though, that decouples it from everything
from the community aspect. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think this is as far as you can go while still keeping that community aspect to a degree.
Yeah. And even now, I mean, we even saw it with Double XP Extended. Like, the last two were not normal in the way that it worked. Like, people just, they knew they had a week, so they'd get, you know, they'd just get on and do what they were doing, you know, whenever.
And, you know, another thing you could do, and I'm going to be seen as the evil one here. If you wanted to monetize this, have some bond price associated with it, you can increase it to 72 hours.
The horns up, Shane.
What was that?
They're starting to show. I said, put the horns away, Shane. They're starting to show.
Hey, I said people wouldn't like me for it. I'm just saying if they wanted a way to monetize it, there you go.
Well, the sad thing is that was my first reaction upon reading this, because I saw Mod Mike, and I'm like, like, isn't this is monetization area. This is interesting.
Well, no, so I am no, very leery. It's not monetization. He's in charge of the live ops side, right? And this this fits into the live ops wheelhouse.
I know, and it just conveniently also fits into the other wheelhouse. Like, I don't know. I am worried about that, though. I'm not going to lie. That is something that I think is concerning.
Yeah. All right. All right. I think we can leave Double XP Live there on that.
Hey, we still got all of our limbs after?
Yeah, we do, and we still have some time.
Oh, wow.
This wouldn't be my produced data, but we can go through some of the Reddit TLDW of the data stream, if you want.
Yeah.
All right. And, you know, I think this is what people really wanted to hear out of archaeology. 1 out of 101 for the Dragonmatic. From Big Game Hunter. 1 out of 100 from a Tetra Compass.
Sure seems more rare than that, though.
Yeah, it does.
I know people have been
in the initial, in the initial few days of it arriving, I thought it'd be something like 1 in 50, but as more and more people spread it out, I thought maybe 1 in 150, but it's right in the middle on there with that. So with these rates, it would mean that you would need to do you would effectively need to do about 200 or so to have a double the chance of getting it, and around 370 Big Game Hunter kills to have a 70% chance of getting the Matic.
Can you imagine? I mean, just one kill takes a lot, right?
Yeah.
It takes some time.
Yeah. So, in any case, skill pets, because there was other stuff in this data stream aside from that. 38,140 as of recording Archie skill pets in game.
Oh, cool. I'm in that group. Yeah.
113 people destroyed 150 Archie pets. As in, they got the pet and destroyed it. Yeah.
I've never understood that.
And the longest run without getting the pet has been 180.6 million XP. Yeah. Averaging 1,734 a day. Other skill pets per year, and, you know, you can definitely see how much people are playing RS more, because in 2020, the number of skill pets per day has shot up drastically. In 2018, they averaged 3,500 a day. 2019, 3,653 a day. And in 2020, probably because of archaeology, averaging 10,624 skill pets a day given out worldwide.
Really?
For a total of 1.274,913 in 2020. 1.33 million total in 2019, and 1.28 total in 2018.
Nice.
So we're shooting up exponentially.
Uh-huh. Yeah, for real.
The most earned pet. This is a fun little thing you can take a guess at. The listeners are already seeing this if they're watching video. Take a guess at what the most earned pet is.
This year?
Overall.
Overall? Constitution.
Yes.
Ha.
Makes sense because you're always getting Constitution XP when you kill. Nope. Followed by Brains, the farming pet.
Because of the POF.
I guess so.
And that used to be the one of the hardest. Like that one in Dungeoneering used to be like the
well, I got that one on the first day. Rocky.
Oh, we know, Shade.
The mining pet on is third. Now the least earned. Okay. What's the least earned?
Hunter.
Ace. Construction.
Oh, duh. Okay, that one's hard too. I don't know what it is about that one. That one's hard to get.
Followed by Rue, the rune crafting pet. And then Ace, really? The hunter pet.
Okay. I knew it had to be in there because I know that one's rough.
Yeah. Rounding out the top five are Ralph for thieving and Bernie for fire making of least earned. Anachrony agility laps. Fastest was 4 minutes 23 seconds. Slowest 29 minutes 46 seconds. Average 8 minutes 11.
And that was me, guys. Spikes,
and the normal spikes around 7. Then there's a spike around 7 minutes for the achievement, but the normal is around 8 minutes.
Right on. Actually, I'm not even the 29 minute. I'm still wandering around the island trying to find my way around the
All right. Let's have some archaeology gain data. So prior to archaeology coming out through March, the most gained skills were invention, constitution, defense, and farming.
Okay.
The first week of archaeology, we saw everything drop off, and archaeology shot up like a rocket with farming in seconds still, which is nice. Because, of course, you can do it through the farm, and that's like a 5-minute check. Mm-hmm. And presently, archaeology stopped going up and has leveled off, and actually went down for the first time in the last few days before recording this. But it is light years and light years ahead of everything else on here.
Yeah, naturally.
And I mean that's just because everyone's training it, and we saw that in the numbers, and we talked about that on the bit that you know people were still doing that. Level distribution in archaeology. There's a good chunk between levels 1 to 10. The vast, vast majority are under 70. More than 50% are under 70. So, and, you know, that's what I'd say within Clan Quest. Our level in Clan Quest is in the 70s, so that's fine.
Well, if there's that many under 70, then that means the map prices probably are the...
Are which, sorry?
The material prices are where they're going.
Yeah.
That's pretty much the
majority is under 70 right now in that range based on this. So, then it looks like probably I'd say 25-ish% is in the 80 to 120 range on that. Let's see. I'm not going to go through all these collections. Number of completed collections. The top three most completed collections are Zaros 1, Zamorak 1, and Zaros 1 for the batteries. The least are Magic Man, Bandos 3, and Knowledge is Power.
I figured it would be the whatever ones are given Tetra pieces. Or,
yeah, that's exactly it. But Zamorak 1 for the museum is on here. So that's just a Chronote 1, as is Zaros 1. The Zaros 1 for batteries is on here in the top three.
Really?
Yeah. 1.1 million collections completed in total.
I wonder if they had... Well, I don't really know. I mean, I guess it's an XP boost.
Yeah.
Like gathering.
Yeah. Unlocked relics, Font of Life, and see, this is an interesting one because that's through the tutorial on there. 246,055 people have completed that tutorial and used that relic. 246,000.
That's crazy.
Unexpected Diplomacy, 88,000. Ring of Luck, 62,000. Ring of Wealth, 40,000. Pouch Protector, 40,000. And the least unlocked relic is Conservation of Energy, the Divination one. Where's my Pharmacology? I'm either not seeing it or it's not on this list. Interesting.
Oh, it would be. Oh, it's interesting. You would think, especially with Double XP coming up, if anyone.
Yeah, that cares. Pharmacology's right there, 19,421.
Okay.
The most active relics are Font of Life, Unexpected Diplomacy, Luck of the Dwarves, Ring of Luck, Pouch Protector, Ring of Wealth. Fascinating. And
that Luck of the Dwarves is nice, dude. You don't have to carry that ring on you.
Yeah.
With your combat stuff. Like,
5,000 people have activated Pharmacology who have got it.
That's it?
Yeah.
Wow.
270 always adds. The least is Inspire Awe at 11. And only 25 have Conservation of Energy active. That's weird.
Well, that's probably 25 people that are keeping that porter going.
Oh, I'm sorry. Conservation of Energy is the ultimate combat one at 119. That's why. Sorry. Wrong.
Okay.
Divine Conversion. 4296 right, people have that one up.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's see. What else have we got? HSR and Porters. 23% more HSRs in-game. Huh. And 17% less Porters in-game since Archaeology came out.
Yep. I'll use my share.
Yeah. Drop rates. Tony's Matic is a 1 in 1,000 key from the Tetra Compass, and 1 in 10 key is a shadow key. The distorted key provides no chance. It's like a Blurberry special. Inquisitor staff pieces, 1 in a million when the pylon is active. And this is after being nerfed. 1 in 100,000 when the ancient magic munitions excavation. 1 in 75,000 from Praetorian remains, and 1 in 50,000 from the Praetorian war table. Chances increase by 10% when pylon is active. Luck rings also increase chance.
100,000.
And, you know, the Dragon Maddox we already mentioned. 1 in 101 from Big Game Hunter and 1 in 100 from Tetra Compass is. The Spear of Annihilation is 1 in 50,000. The Tetra Compass pieces are 1 in 1,500. What? I would have thought that that would have been more common than that, based on how I got Tetra Compass pieces.
Just based on what I've gotten so far, and I haven't gotten really any from, like, collections. I might have all come from Excavate.
Yeah. Now, the complete tomes are 1 out of 250,000 divided by your excavation level plus archaeology level. So if you're level 99 and you're excavating something that's level 99, you're going to divide that by 198, and it's going to be a very, very small chance of getting a complete tome. So complete tomes then get rarer as you go up.
Which I guess makes sense because they also go up and
in terms of the XP that you're getting, right?
Yeah. Yep.
That, I wasn't expecting that, because I feel like I've gotten more of those than Tetra Compass pieces.
Yeah, I haven't gotten a lot of those. I mean, I got more earlier, but I haven't gotten a lot from, I mean, from 70 to 80, maybe 2, 3
all right,
most.
Then people wonder what the average player looks like, and this is for players who play for the last 28 days that aren't a bot. The average account age is 9.2 years with 194 quest points. Average combat level of 107 with total level 1907 and 385,846,907 XP average.
So
the average account age is 9 years old. And that proves a lot of the theories that we had, that we have an older player base.
Yeah.
But with that, the average levels are in the 70 band. The current average archaeology level is 45. Invention is 47. Divination, hunter, 62. Runecrafting, construction, and dungeoneering are all 63. The combat stats are 75 for attack, 75 strength, 77 defense, 72 range, 71 prayer, 75 magic, and 79 constitution. 66 agility, 69 herb lore, 64 thieving, 71 crafting, 70 fletching, 72 slayer, 74 mining, 73 smithing, 70 cooking, 71 cooking, 73 fire making, 74 wood cutting, and 63 farming. And see, this is what many people need to realize, is that everybody thinks, oh yeah, max, the majority of players are max. But no, that is not the case. The majority of players are mid-level range. And I hope people will finally see that.
Well, I mean, it's pretty mind-blowing when you think about it.
Oh, I knew it was going to be. I knew it was going to be in the 60 or 70 level range.
It's just, but you know, it's hard because how many people do you know in the 60 and 70 range?
Exactly.
Like, I don't know any. And like my alt,
right?
Or
and
my
and
second
see,
account.
I think what we have is that the vast majority of players that you and I know and the people who listen to this podcast are in the higher echelons. I think that's what's happening. And why we don't see them. Because if you talk to Joe Average RuneScape player, this is what they're seeing, what this level board says. So hopefully this is a wake-up call to people to realize that you can't just keep, you know, pushing for max level content in 120s when in reality there's lots of people who still haven't even completed the base game.
Right, but that being said, you have to be cautious because, I mean, that was the emphasis behind Menophos. And, well, that didn't work out real well.
Yeah. And
it was supposed to be for that band of players.
You have to wonder if they, you know, went there and whatnot. So, let's see. Top 10 Slayer tasks most in 2020 have been,
Waterfiend.
Manurazi. Oh, these are player names. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
Oh, sorry. I thought we were looking at NPCs. But 957 Slayer tasks so far complete this year. 819 for number two. 753 for number three.
That's hardcore slaying right there.
Yeah, the most for all time. 8592 Monzel. 7108 Balzorn and Ma Krapu, 6978, and this is all time.
Wow!
Since March 31st, 2014, when this data came in. Top 10 most completed Slayer tasks of one creature by a single player: 1689 times Abyssal Demons. 1615 Dark Beasts.
Of course.
1568 Cockatrice. 1482 Gargoyle. 1473 Banshee. 1245 Mutated Jadinko. 1144 Edemu. 969 Green Dragons. 849 Trolls. And 798 Crawling Hands. Handy.
Well, a few of them that surprised me, but
yeah,
most are predictable.
And the bottom 10 completed tasks Volcanic creatures, 40 times. Cows, 61 times. Minions of Scarab, 62 times. Red Dragon, 65 times. Skeletal Wyvern, 69 times. Cyclops, 70 times. Garrox, 71. Suka, 74. Earth Warriors, 75. And Spiritual Warriors, 81 times.
Those all make sense.
Yeah.
Except for the Spiritual Warriors.
I don't know why that would be there. I think everybody just likes Spiritual Mages.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe.
PVM combat levels, deaths due to PVM, that's not that interesting. Most of them are, of course, in the high end, 120, 1 to 130, where people actually die. that was deaths due to PvP, and death due to PVM is largely the same. And average player deaths per day due to cows are 0.75. April 16th killed 3 people. March 2nd killed a level 138 player. Next, 450. Abyssal demons, 150. Chickens, 1 every 4 to 5 days.
What?
Highwayman 2. Ripper demons, 250. Only 160 before archaeology. Telos, 250. And QBD, 80. Now,
it's only 80 deaths?
Average per day.
Oh, average per day.
Average per day is what we're looking at here. Grand Exchange transactions, you see that spike up around archaeology time. Holy crap, to 4.68 trillion coins transferred.
Wow.
1.1 million transactions. Yeah, make sure that's that's definitely trillions. And the last data on this sheet here, POH styles. For biggest one is basic wood, followed by fancy stone, then tropical wood, then whitewash stone, then basic stone, or then dark stone, then basic stone, then Fremenek style wood. Which makes sense, I guess, hey? Just leave your house in your basic wood style at this point.
I mean, I got mine in stone.
Yeah, me too. Me too. All right, that was the data stream. I'll put a link to this in the notes, the one-off chance, one-off time we do use a Reddit TLDW for the data stream, which don't expect that to become a habit. I like making my own notes. Alrighty. And one final piece of good Jagex news this week. If you are in the UK and you are an NHS worker, National Health Service worker, they are offering 3 months of free RuneScape and Old School membership to up to 500 NHS workers. If you have a valid NHS email address, all you need to do is fill out a form, and then you can claim your code for this. So if you live in the UK and you are an NHS worker, you can claim some free RuneScape membership. All right. Let's move on to tech news. But before we do that, I think we have to talk about Patreon. And we're going to say thank you to our Patreon supporters. But first, I think you have a bit of an announcement about what's happening next Monday, because we had some technical difficulties this past Monday.
A little bit. But they have been resolved, and I am pleased. In fact, I'm overjoyed to say we get to celebrate Star Wars Day together on May the 4th by watching a movie in the RSBNB Discord. The Rise of Skywalker, the new one. Woo! Yay! You hear the clap, Shane?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
And with that, I will just say that this is, of course, open to Patreon supporters. So if you think this is interesting and you want to join us, just visit rsbnb.com/Patreon and subscribe for as little as $1 a month. But what am I doing? Because, you know, we wouldn't be even having movie night if it wasn't for our Patreon supporters. So this week I would like to thank 29 Let's Go, Brock H, Cameron, Cass, CGB900, Christian S, Diana, Jade Gizmo, James W, Jason S, Joe M, John P, Kyle, Nora, Our Memories, Rastafa, Rippeth, The Naked Captain, The Lion, Tom V, and Zez. Thank you all of you for your support. It truly does mean the world to us. And if you want to come join us for movie night, all you have to do is head on over to patreon.com/RSBNB and sign up for as little as $1 a month. And with that, you gain full access to our entire back catalog of monthly bits. You can join in for movie night. You get early access to the show notes before the show goes out. And you do help fund the costs of RSBNB Update for hosting and production. We also have a VIP tier for $3 a month where you get a special rank on Discord and a mention on the podcast at the start of the month and access to high-quality stereo AAC versions of the show. And for $5 a month, if you want to give the ultimate gift, you can become an insider and you get a shout-out each and every week and you gain exclusive access to the outtakes that we use for the clip show at the end of the year. And we've had some really fun clips these past few weeks that that tier will get access to. So if you sign up now for that tier, you get access to all the clips going back to January this year, so you can get an idea of what the clip show for this year is going to look like before anyone else does. And, you know, we're doing our monthly bit. We just finished recording one, summarizing archaeology and its impacts 1 month later. That was a great one to record. That'll be going up at the same time as this podcast that you're listening to right now, but all Patreon members gain access to it. We also have Inside RSBNB Update, a fun little blog post at the start of each month where we go into one aspect of RSBNB Update. Sometimes it's a video, and it just explains a little bit about how things work on the inside. And, of course, we have the round table, which we'll be doing this month for Double XP Weekend, which should be good fun. I think we'll do that on the first weekend. I think it makes sense to do it on the first weekend of Double XP when most people are engaged with that, right? Rather than later on. So... And, of course, in addition to that, movie night, which will be happening on Monday in the RSBNB Discord. And details will be posted on our Patreon page at patreon.com/RSBNB on how to join for that. And you can join for as little as $1 a month. If you want to just come watch a movie with us or get the monthly bit, that's all you need to do. $1 a month to patreon.com/RSBNB. Thanks so much, everyone. All right. Tech news. So everybody is, you know, trying to do this video chat thing. And, you know, we've had lots of interesting little things where, you know, we even have TV shows that are trying to figure out how to do what us podcasters have been doing for literally a decade plus at this point.
Isn't it funny to watch?
I know. It is really funny to watch. Really,
like, I see people trying to stream. I'm like, call a streamer, dude, because, like, your Tonight Show sucks. Like,
right?
Like, for real? Like, last week Tonight was, like, so bad. Whenever I'm like, oh, no, come on. Can someone get, what's his name, Ninja, on this or something?
Is you look at all these TV shows doing this streaming thing, and their video quality is worse than what the streamers have. Because they don't know how to do it.
It's bad. Like, it's not good.
But that's beside the point. You know, everybody's been focused on Zoom and how Zoom has, you know, had inflated numbers and whatnot. And people are wondering, oh, maybe we should be using Skype or Discord or something else instead. But what Google has done for this is they've made Google Meet Premium, their premium video meeting platform, free for everyone. And the idea behind this is that being a premium video conferencing product, rolling it out to everybody in the coming weeks, is that this is a solution that is trusted by schools and governments and various corporations around the world to conduct online meetings. And, you know, Google's right in that, because on one hand you have Zoom and on the other hand you have Skype. And you need someone who brings a different perspective to this kind of thing. Skype has always been about communication. Zoom has always been about doing it easily. Whereas, you know, Google, you get the entire Google experience and the Google stack behind it, which means it's not going to drop out barring some catastrophic failure on the internet with this. And what they are touting most from this is that everybody who uses Meet has a secure and reliable experience from the start. So they're going to gradually ramp up its availability to more and more people over the coming weeks. But, you know, if you want to use this and if you want to get involved with this, all you got to do is sign up at meet.google.com. And if it's not available to you, you just enter in your email address and you'll be notified when it's going to be available to you. And that's literally all there is to it. And, you know, they stress that it's built on their secure Google Cloud platform. Meet data is not used for advertising. It won't be sold to third parties, as was happening with Zoom and Facebook on that. So I think that's something we're all very, very happy about with that. And previously, it was only available to their premium corporate G Suite accounts, but they're making it so it's also going to be available for free to individuals as well, which is really important to just increase the amount of people who are available for it. So that's Google Meet, going to be available soon for anybody who needs to conduct an online meeting or online streaming event in that case. And, you know, one thing I'm really interested in with all these people looking at streaming online is I'm wondering to see what we can get for innovation in video streaming, because as it is right now, and as it was last year, or rather 2 years ago at this point, when we were doing video shows, Skype was the best for that over Discord. And that annoyed the crap out of us. And, yes, you know, if Discord had a good video streaming solution and I could get independent video feeds from everyone, I wouldn't say no to video shows again. It's just a question of, you know, the technology being in the right place.
It's a question of, does anybody want to see our ugly ass faces? That's not what they come here for.
Well, yeah, and I mean, we're a podcast. We're always going to be audio first and foremost. And that's what, you know, we need to underscore, is that podcasting is audio and vice versa. All right. Next piece of tech news. Apple is going to be paying $18 million to settle their FaceTime fiasco when they intentionally broke FaceTime on older iPhones. Now, you want to know what the kicker for this is?
This sounds like the thing that they did when they had to pay for screwing everyone's battery life over.
But class members are due to receive $3 each.
Well, isn't that special? See, that's the thing. The only way to make it hurt is if you all if y'all join together for class action. And if you do that, you get $3. Like, where's the incentive for Apple not to do this again?
I don't know.
Oh, so it's just a cost of doing business, huh?
It's an $18 million common fund that covers 30% of the total average damages. And
$18 million to Apple?
Yeah.
Cost of doing business.
Because of so many members, you'll receive $3 each, give or take. But the suit's two class representatives who initially started this gained $7,500 each as an incentive award for their participation. Class counsel is eligible to receive $5.4 million in attorney's fees and $1.1 million in reimbursement expenses. This is just one big scheme, isn't it? One big corporate scheme. The only people really getting paid are the lawyers.
A lot of that going around lately. I don't know. It's kind of weird.
It really is. It really is.
It's almost like there's not a cop on duty or something.
This was back in the iPhone 4 and 4S days when owners were unwilling to upgrade from iOS 6 on reports that the newer operating system, iOS 7, caused problems in terms of the device slowing down and FaceTime not working. And iOS 7 was a major pain for those old legacy devices. But now, I think everybody's wised up and we live in a world where the Apple devices work for, you know, 4 to 5 years at this time. Like you and I were discussing last week that we feel at this point no reason to upgrade our 8 pluses.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. My wife tried to get me to do it a few months back, and I'm like, no, my phone works just fine. I don't want a different phone.
Yeah, and it's got the Touch ID, it's got the button. I don't know, it'd be nice to have an edge-to-edge display, but I like the physical home button, as physical as it can be.
I mean, I this has been my favorite factor, and I'm going to cry if I ever have to switch, because I just don't.
There is good news. Apparently, they're looking at making an iPhone SE Plus next year.
Oh. That's cool.
Would be the iPhone 8 body with.
Oh, that's what I was going to ask you, because we just talked about something like that, but it was. I didn't have the Plus version, so.
Yeah.
That would be cool.
Yeah, it was going to be this year, but the pandemic has made it so it's going to be pushed off to next year.
Oh, okay.
All right. Well, you know, we also like talking about space here at RSVNB Update. NASA has named the companies to develop human landers for the Artemis moon missions. And, you know, there has been the constant push to go back to the moon by 2024. And NASA has selected three U.S. companies for this. And the following companies are Blue Origin of Kent, Washington, Dynetics of Huntsville, Alabama, and SpaceX of Hawthorne, California is developing the Starship. Dynetics will develop the human landing system, which is the structure that provides the ascent and descent capabilities that will launch to and from the moon. And Blue Origin will be the three-stage lander on the rocket system. So we've heard all these names before, with the lesser exception of Dynetics, but Blue Origin and SpaceX are well known in this field. And, you know, just like we're seeing the return of faring astronauts to the International Space Station at the end of May, SpaceX is going to have a huge role in this one as well. And, you know, once we can start to pioneer these things, we can hope that this kind of thing will become routine.
Yeah, I'm a little concerned, though, that this might be like a prelude to I mean, honestly, I think they're going there for surveillance and going to try to mine the thing.
Yeah,
detailed maps that came out this week.
Yes, I did.
Stuff. Yeah,
There's definitely going to be some mining operations going on there and whatnot.
Which I'm not sure I don't know. Should we do that? Probably not.
I don't know.
It does control our tides, so I mean, I don't know. Maybe
I don't think we're
going to
do that much of it, but I mean,
we're humans. Yeah, we will.
The amount of time that has been
take until we kill it.
The amount of time that has been spent on the moon is small, and the amount of time spent anywhere under the surface of the moon and excavating it has been even smaller. And the worst thing you would want to do is unearth some ancient pathogen from 4.6 billion years ago that would cause havoc on us here. Because as we're seeing right now, we do have problems with that.
Yeah, we already have them. They exist in, you know.
Bats.
Bats. Right now.
So, yeah, I mean, it's very interesting to see where this is going, but this is definitely some good news and shows that once these contracts are signed, this mission has a higher degree of happening than not happening. So fingers crossed on that.
Yeah, fingers crossed, because this could be a great bridge and a great way to study how to live, or just exploration in general, how to do that, how to set up, you know, these little biospheres or domes or whatever we end up using.
It excites me. All right. Skill of the month, ending and recording time of just 4 minutes from now. We'll see what the final numbers are as we round out the show, but I don't think Brew is going to be dethroned. Brew hit his 200 mil, and that was it for him.
He flattened the curve, man. Flattened the curve.
he was going up like the worst of them, and then, oh, we're just going to flatten overnight.
Yeah, let's flatten the curve.
Second, we have Derp with 104.5, and third, PK Mage with 93.4 million XP. And we'll see where all this falls as we wrap up the show, but it certainly looks like that's going to be the final results on this one. And I can report that Skill of the Month will be back for two competitions each month. We have two in the month of May. We have Thieving, which starts on May 5th and runs until the 15th, and then Attack, which runs on the 15th, runs from the 15th until the 25th. One thing that I'm not sure of yet is if we're going to filter it out in terms of making it so that you can only have one combat skill chosen, or if it's combat, make all of them count or something to that effect. But this one's going to be Attack.
Okay.
So we have Thieving and Attack in May.
And Attack.
And, you know, if these are successful, we'll see Skill of the Month return.
Yeah.
All righty. And, you know, as we're waiting for that to wrap up, I think we can just go into our achievements, which brings us boatload more of archaeology.
A lot of achievements. Well, to start off with, Shane, our very own Alex43 got 99 archaeology on 29th.
Nice.
Awesome. Derpit New with 120 archaeology on the 29th. Lanakia with 99 magic on April 29th. Lanakia again with 99 thieving on April 29th. We have Obod.
Cubond.
Obond. Cubond.
I think it's Cubond. The squiggly line that's doing that.
Oh, okay. With 008 with 99 archaeology. We have Thieves with 99 archaeology on April 29th. We have Okosov with 0 with 99 archaeology on April 28th. We have Jadkor with 99 archaeology on April 28th. Kexi with 99 archaeology April 28th. We have Lexi10 with 99 fishing on April 28th. We have Magic King with 99 invention on April 28th. Zill with 99 archaeology on the 28th. We have, Kebab Chief. Kebab Thief. Thief. Kebab Thief with...
That's a fun name, isn't it?
99 archaeology, yes. That was on April 27th. And Mikey X with 120 invention on April 27th. We have Pony Picker with 99 archaeology on April 27th. We have Warrock with 99 archaeology on April 27th. Our Cronia with 99 divination on April 26th.
Nicely done. And then I'll pick him up with Earth, our very own Lord Earth, a raid with 99 constitution on the 26th. Malchiar, also with 99 constitution on the 26th. Then we have Idiot on a Stick with 120 magic on the 25th. Jesse Pinkman with 99 archaeology on the 25th. Lanakea with 99 crafting. And Lord Dusty with 99 archaeology rounding out the 25th. Moving out onto the 24th, we have One Rib with 99 Slayer, Houndears with 99 Magic, Moglin 444 with 99 Thieving, Rippeth with 99 Slayer, Yitzi with 99 Archaeology. Then on the 23rd, we have Laxrax with 99 Firemaking, Shiro Shana with 99 Archaeology, The Firebro with 99 Ranged, and 99 Archaeology on April 23rd. Nicely done. And this is the warm-up for Double XP Weekend, I'm guessing.
I think so. We're not easing into it. We're just
going.
We're just going.
All right. What do you got for pick of the week this week?
Well, so I've got a cool game, or at least I think it's cool. It's been around for a few years now. It's called Deceit. It is a free-to-play game on Steam where you are dropped off. Essentially, you wake up, there's five of you, and one-third, so two of your companions are actually like bad guys, but you don't know that. And I mean, they know that, but you don't know that. And so there are times when like the lights will go out or whatever. When that happens, you can like attack them and get them and stuff, and they have to try to figure out who the bad people are. But if they pick the wrong one and shoot you and you're not the one, then they're screwed. So it's
almost a little bit like Gary's Mod, Trouble in Terrorist Town.
That's what I'm hearing.
Except with a little bit of more gore and zombieism associated from it, based on the screenshots, I think.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. That pretty much sums it up. So I think it's fun. It's a free-to-play game, so I mean, you know, you can't really go too wrong with that. It doesn't seem to be like overly pushy with MTX or anything. I mean, there's some cosmetic stuff, but it's just really fun for like if you have a group of friends, it's kind of like a Clue game. You know what I mean? Like a Clue smashed together with a party pack, Jack's party pack, and I don't know what all else, but I've enjoyed it. I've had fun with it. I recommend playing it with your friends. If you're a clan out there, play this game. Like it's a great kind of like bonding thing.
Yeah, it's always good to find these free games that allow people to just play with each other and do some fun stuff like this. That's what we always look for here, and it's definitely something that our group looks at because we like these kind of little games with deception in it too. So.
Yeah, well, that's what's so fun. You really find out who are good liars.
Right.
That's Deceit, and it's the pick of the week this week. You can find it on Steam. And like I said, it's free to play. So.
Alrighty. Sounds good to me. So what have you been up to on RS?
Yeah, I'm still doing archaeology, and I'm enjoying every minute of it. I'm not done with it yet. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm just not bored of archaeology right now. So, doing archaeology. I'm still at the wharf, which I'm trying to open up the gate. I'm currently level 80. but I've been slow rolling it just because I'm working on my Encando anyway. Right. So, I got two pieces. I got a long way to go. But I'm going to try to get that Encando on to the next place.
Yeah, and you know what my concern with this is? And you mentioned Warforge and opening up the gate. I excavated one of the north sites for one of the keys, the material caches, for about an hour and a half before I got one. And I did tons and tons of fishing there as well for probably another hour and a half and no key still. They are apparently adding bad luck mitigation at some point in the future on this.
Well, maybe by the time
just wondering if I should just wait and stop fishing and mining there.
I don't know though, man. I can't because the Encando pickaxe is too good to not get.
Right. And I that's was the thing. If you're gathering your own materials, the boost you get from Encando is worth it.
Yeah. So I kind of need it. And like I said, I'm not bored. I'm really not mining the grind right now. So I'm just going to keep at it until I get tired of it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I feel like I said, I have a 120 cape in person. I feel like I got to get it in game. And, I mean, it's not like I'm burning myself out with it. So that's good. I like the skill. So I think it's definitely something we can do. And enjoy, right? So that's what I've been doing. But aside from that, you know, I think we also need to talk about Yak Track.
Oh, yes.
Because that ends on Sunday.
You've been working on it?
Yeah, that ends on Sunday. And I am on task 50. You?
Let's not talk about it.
Okay, where are you at? Honestly.
Honestly? Like two or three? And I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I've only done a few.
So you're not really going for it then?
Dude, archaeology hit, and I just didn't do anything else.
See, every other task has had an archaeology one, so I've been okay with it.
I mean, I'm sure, but, like, I didn't have it in my I don't have it in my inventory, and I just, I don't know. I can get kind of single sometimes when
yeah.
I get into something in this game, and that's kind of where I've been.
Yeah. And that's fine. That's fine. All right. Well, that was a roundabout whirlwind RSBNB update that went who knows where and with this. And we broke news. We talked about the future of Double XP. We talked about player advocacy groups. We talked about data. It feels like we talked about everything. It's like this episode was a roundup of the last month. I think that's how I feel about this. But if you guys want to get the full show notes for this, just visit update.rsbnb.com. If you want to subscribe to the podcast, you can do that on any podcast listener out there. Just visit update.rsbnb.com/subscribe. And of course, you can get us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Pocket Cast, Stitcher, practically anything under the sun. Update.rsbnb.com/subscribe. And, you know, if you like what you hear and you like hearing us each and every week, just head on over to Apple Podcasts or Google and Spotify and leave a rating for the show. That helps with discoverability. So with that being said, we'll be back next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. Take care, everyone.
See ya.